Wisconsin Eye's Campaign 2025 programming is sponsored by Wisconsin Counties Association, Nicolet National Bank, Wisconsin Hospital Association, Operating Engineers Local 139, the Wisconsin Realtors Association, the Wisconsin Laborers District Council, and North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. To support programs like this, please consider a tax-deductible donation at wisi.org/donate or by texting WISI to 44321.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Judge Brad Schimel is a candidate for the Wisconsin race for State Supreme Court. The election is April 1st. Judge Schimel, welcome to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me here.
All right, we'll start by having you tell our viewers why you're running for State Supreme Court.
Well, it wasn't my plan. I've been a public servant for 35 years now. And I really enjoy this. I never thought I would, frankly, enjoy being a judge as much as I do. I loved being the advocate in the courtroom, but I have really enjoyed being a circuit court judge. I wasn't planning to run for Supreme Court, but in 2023, I watched what happened, and we had a candidate who ran openly promising how they rule on cases. And then, unfortunately, those promises ended up getting kept after the liberals took the majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That drove me to get involved. We have to restore objectivity to the court. I just met with several business groups today that get this message that no one's going to invest in Wisconsin if there's not stability, that the legislature makes the law, the courts apply it the way it's written, and that you have 132 legislators that the public can reach and have their voices heard making the law rather than four justices in the majority of the court that make the law. So this is why I got in this race.
What would you say are your main experiences that qualify you for a seat on the state Supreme Court?
Well, like I said, I've been my whole career, 35 years, my only clients ever been the people of Wisconsin. My time as a prosecutor, I tried hundreds of jury trials. Countless motion hearings. As Attorney General, I got another view of the state working with the policymakers, representing them as the Attorney General, as you know, oftentimes the legislature or the governor were my client that I was defending in a particular lawsuit. I got a behind the scenes tour of just how important it is that you leave the powers of the individual branches of government to each of the branches of government to which those powers are delegated. And then my time as a circuit judge for the last 6 years, I've gotten a chance to see it from the bench side as well. I think this brings a broad array of experiences that leave me qualified to sit on the Supreme Court.
Is there a specific case that shapes your approach to the law, would you say?
Oh, my.
Or something throughout history that you think was really influential in you thinking you wanted to be a judge?
You know, I didn't want to become a judge. Like I said, I enjoyed being the advocate. When I was Attorney General, I still viewed judge as, I thought it was isolated. I looked at it as too separated. It turns out that there is, it's really liberating, that isolation sometimes. Everything in our lives is politics now, right? Everything we do. You turn on a lot of cartoons and there are politics if you pay close enough attention. And it's, come on, give it a break sometimes. Can we just enjoy life? Can we just have fun sometimes? Can we laugh without it always being political? In my courtroom, there are no politics. Judges take a different oath than other public officials because we have an additional piece. We, of course, like all, swear to defend and uphold the Constitution. But judges have this additional piece that we commit that we will administer justice without regard to persons. And it doesn't mean we don't care about people. What it means is it doesn't matter who the person in front of us is. So politics are out. It doesn't matter if you're the most popular person in town or the least popular person in town. What are the facts of this case and what does the law say about that? So I've found that as a judge to be like I said, liberating.
Is that kind of your judicial philosophy, would you say?
Yes. My judicial philosophy is I don't make the law. And there's plenty of work to do as a judge trying to determine what are the facts in the case. And then, of course, determining which laws apply, because the lawyers will come in and they'll differ as to which statute should drive the end result in this case. You've got plenty of work to do there without trying to also write the statutes into an image you'd prefer them to be.
The court currently has what's considered to be a 4-3 liberal right. majority, and many believe this election will determine that ideological future of the court and control. Do you believe that ideological balance on that court is important?
I do. I actually, that it's a, and, you know, the balance on the court reflects Wisconsin. You know, 4-3, either one way or the other, kind of reflects how we are as a state. We aren't all in for either party. You've got about 50% of the state lean one way and 50%, or maybe it's 40% lean one way, 40% lean the other way, and the 20% in the middle, they might change from day to day which way they lean.
So is that how voters maybe should be looking at this race, is it in terms of ideological balance?
Well, I'm running to flip the ideological balance on the court. But my motivations aren't because of that. My motivations are because I want to restore objectivity. And right now, the liberals on the court are not objective. They are prejudging cases. They are going through a political agenda. And that's what I'm running to put an end to.
Your challenger, Susan Crawford, states on her website that the court is being threatened by an all-out effort to politicize the court to drive a right-wing agenda. And then on your website, you say the dramatic overreach, you've talked about this, dramatic overreach of Wisconsin's Supreme Court is leading our state to destruction. Can you describe what you mean by that overreach, and then also how you would talk to a voter that believes that there is some sort of right-wing agenda in your candidacy?
You know, these are talking points that that people use to attack their political foes. All of my roles in government as a prosecutor, assistant district attorney, and district attorney, I didn't make the law. I enforced the law that the legislature wrote. As Attorney General, I was either enforcing the law or defending Wisconsin law. In fact, for much of the time that I was Attorney General, my opponent was suing the state of Wisconsin in her private practice. There were times that she was suing the state, I was defending the state. And as a judge, certainly, I don't make policy. There isn't a far-right agenda. I didn't plan to do this. And yes, my previous roles, I was a Republican as Attorney General and a Republican as a District Attorney, because those roles are partisan. As a judge, I'm not a partisan. My opponent has represented some of the most extreme left organizations in her private practice, and she was Chief Legal Counsel during Governor Doyle's administration. There's plenty of politics there. The question for any judge is the same question we ask of jurors. When we seat jurors in a case, I usually hold up a pen and I put my hand on the clicker like this and I tell them, I don't have one of those men in black pens that I can click the top and there's a flash of light and you all forget everything about your past. You come here with your history. You have political views. You have personal views. You have all sorts of things that are the baggage that you come to this courtroom with. What I need to do is ensure that each of you that ultimately sits on this jury can set those things aside and decide this case based on the evidence you hear in the courtroom, the arguments of the lawyers, and then the law as I instruct you. We expect that of jurors, and they fulfill that obligation. Day in, day out, when jurors serve, they do a great job of it. We should expect no less from a judge, much less a justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, that you will consider the facts of the case and the law. And that's it. Your personal views, I kind of look at putting the robe on as just like it's a force field that holds, and it holds my personal views in. And in that courtroom, this is about the evidence here, not what I think inside of me.
Certainly there are a lot of politics yet in this race. You've talked a little bit about how you're navigating and trying to stay away from the politics. How do you advise voters to stay away from politics when they're thinking about this particular race?
You know, here's an example I give them. I frame it as if they've gone to a ball game, usually say a Brewer game, and you've gotten there and you bought your first $17 beer. It's expensive to have a beer at a Brewer game. But you sit down to enjoy the game, and the umpire, instead of coming out in the traditional black that the umpires wear to signify neutrality, the umpire's wearing a St. Louis Cardinals jersey. You're not going to stick around and buy a second beer. You're going to leave because this game, in your mind, is over. But there's a Cardinals fan that thinks, tonight this is great. We're getting a win because the umpire's on our side. We're going to get a win. It feels good that night. It's not going to feel good for that Cardinals fan for long, because now baseball is no longer about the athletes on the field and how the ball bounced or how well somebody threw the ball. It isn't. None of that matters anymore, because it's all going to be about an umpire who's throwing the game. This is the problem when you have people on a court that are wearing a jersey for a team. Only it's a more serious problem, because with baseball, you could just, if baseball's dead, find another game. If the court is no longer objective and it's failing, there's nowhere else to go. And then one of the branches of our government is not functioning the way it should. And I describe it to people like a three-legged stool: executive, legislative, judicial branch. Well, if you take one of those legs out, it's a two-legged stool, and two-legged stools don't stand.
You talked about being an elected Republican in your history as Attorney General. You've been considered a leader within the party. What's an example you could share with our viewers of sort of a judicial determination you've made that demonstrates that you can be independent of your personal politics?
That's every day. And frankly, every case that comes in, I review the briefs. Typically, I'm in the civil division now, so everything is about lawsuits between parties, and it all ends up in motion hearings for summary judgment and default motions and other things.
I don't think you've been challenged by your partisan ideology.
No, and I'll tell you, I read the briefs, and I'll start to have an impression from the briefs. It has nothing to do with what I think. It's the convincing arguments that the lawyers are making. I'll start to have a view about the case, but I scheduled for oral arguments. And when we get to the day of oral arguments, my clerk will ask me, well, which way are you leaning? I'll say, well, I think the plaintiff's got it in this case, or might be defendant. But I'll say, well, I think they're right on this, but I have some questions. That's why I scheduled oral arguments today. And we'll go through the oral arguments, and it happens with some frequency that once I get the answers to my questions, I will get the proverbial light bulb that turns on, and I'll see, no, the law says this is the answer, and I flip that decision. And my clerk will get whiplash looking over, wondering, why did you change your mind? And I'll say, well, did you hear that? There was the fact that made the difference. It's like I said, it's liberating, and it's remarkably easy to do if you make that commitment to set your personal views aside.
You have to do it every day. It's enjoyable. I want to ask you about some issues. Abortion, clearly a very complicated issue that's been before the court, will be before the court. What do you see as the court's role in the debate on that issue?
This issue belongs in the hands of the voters.
It shouldn't even be in the court?
If it's a matter of the court interpreting a statute that's been passed by the legislature, sure, that can make its way to the court. In fact, there is one of the two abortion cases that have been filed with the Supreme Court, accepted by the Supreme Court, one of them has already been argued. Back on November 11th, we had oral arguments. Wisconsin and I carried it in the case Call versus Romanski, the state attorney general suing a county district attorney in Sheboygan County. And those oral arguments happened almost 5 months ago. We're still waiting on the decision. I have concerns about how the court is managing this, because they could have taken those oral arguments long before November 11th. But the timing was interesting. They waited till after the November 5th elections to take those arguments up. And now they could have that decision done by now. In fact, circuit court judges, we have 90 days. When all the last arguments are made, we have 90 days to issue our decision, or we have to explain it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's been sitting on this for 5 months. I think they're playing politics to get this past the April 1st election so that it continues to be an issue that divides Wisconsinites. I've been clear all along about my position on abortion.
You have. There's been some reporting that you had publicly supported the 1849 abortion ban law. What are your thoughts on that law
now? I don't
now?
Publicly support the law.
Okay.
What happened was back in over 12 years ago when I was district attorney, a question was raised as to whether the legislature should go forward and repeal that law because Roe v. Wade made it unenforceable. And I did sign a white paper that talked about that. I have been clear all along. My position as a judge is that, first off, I have my personal views. My wife and I are blessed that we have two daughters that we adopted. Two then 18-year-old young women gave us the chance to have a family we can't have biologically. So we treasure those women, and we also treasure life, even when it's not planned. Those are our personal views. But judges don't make the law. No judge or justice should want to take this decision away from the voters. Because if four judges on the Supreme Court decide this issue, then they render a good portion of the voters in Wisconsin, they render their voices silenced. It should be decided by the voters, either through legislation that their elected representatives pass or through referendum. But this decision belongs there. It's not set. There is no clear guidance on this in the Wisconsin Constitution. If there is an argument for a constitutional right in the Wisconsin Constitution, some lawyer is going to have to come up with a creative argument to support that. But the word abortion doesn't appear in our state constitution. So it's not clearly there. And generally, when something's not clearly in the Constitution, it belongs in the hands of the voters to make this policy.
I want to ask you about the money in this race. Millions coming into Wisconsin, a lot from outside sources, record spending expected, of course. Right. What portion of your campaign is being funded by outside money?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I haven't worked the percentages, but certainly we have several million dollars that has come in through direct transfers through the state Republican Party. My opponent has about double what we have in direct transfers through the state Democratic Party.
What are your thoughts on Elon Musk's support and interest in your race?
Well, Lisa, I've run a 72-county race. I got in this 16 months before Election Day with the very determined purpose to get to voters in every county of the state. I've campaigned in every single county. I've gone to every corner of the state. I have talked to voters in any place where I could get even a small group of people to hear me out as to why it's so important to vote in this election and restore objectivity. It is hard to get your message to all Wisconsin voters in that way. And so definitely you've got to get on the airwaves also. And I'm grateful for the support I'm getting to help deliver my message. But that's the end of it. It's help delivering my message. There is no quid pro quo. But I'd assert my opponent has offered one. Part of why this race has become so nationalized. You know, 97% of the people who've donated to my campaign vote in Wisconsin. Nearly half of my opponent's donors don't vote in Wisconsin. And then in terms of the money, she got caught by the New York Times. They got their hands on an email where the offer was made to national liberal billionaires. If you help get this woman elected to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, we can turn two Republican congressional seats into Democrat congressional seats. That means the promise is that the court's going to gerrymander those congressional seats.
You think a congressional redistricting case would come before the court?
I think it's being invited by that kind of statement.
How you talked about the nationalization of the case. Why do you think this race is getting so much national attention?
Well, I think that's how it's manifesting itself this year in that offer. Because taking two seats and turning them from Republican to Democrat by a court, not the voters, in the United States House of Representatives, well, that affects the balance of power nationwide. Who controls the Congress?
Elon Musk's attention to your race is also part of the national attention story.
But there's a difference. I haven't offered anything. I've never spoken with Elon Musk or anyone that represents him. There's no quid pro quo like I suggest is happening with what my opponent did to raise all this money.
I want to talk to you about all the commercials in this race. It's hard to avoid them. A lot of them are negative. What is the role of commercials in this particular race?
Coming into this, everybody does, all campaigns do polling. We did polling back in December that told us that there were an awful lot of Wisconsinites who had no idea about either candidate. I had higher name recognition because of my time as Attorney General, very little name recognition for my opponent. We knew that there were a lot of persuadable voters who had just hadn't made up their minds yet. So, of course, the TV ads, they need to convey two messages. One is, who are you, and why should people vote for you? And who is your opponent, and why shouldn't they vote for them?
Are there any ads out there right now that you'd like to set the record straight on, things that are being said about you?
Absolutely. Certainly the ads, the false ads relating to the sexual assault kit initiative. And years ago, I sat in this room multiple occasions with Steve doing interviews on this question. I got the Department of Justice, and for 25 years, those sexual assault kits had accumulated in storerooms at police departments and hospitals. No one did anything about getting those tested. I got the Department of Justice. My 25 years by then as a frontline prosecutor taught me the value in getting those kits tested, and I set out to do it. When I got the Department of Justice, zero kits were tested, none. By the time I finished my term as Attorney General, there were zero kits left to be tested. We solved the problem. We got them tested. You can't solve a 25-year problem in a year or a year and a half. It's going to take time. We took that time. We put in the effort. And probably most importantly of all, we caused to be put in place through the legislature a new structure that guarantees this won't happen again. If a sexual assault survivor wants their kit tested, they have that right to have it tested, and that agency must submit that kit for testing.
Voter ID, another issue expected to be before the court. The court has upheld voter ID on several occasions. Would you consider that to be voter ID as decided law? Is that an example of precedent in Wisconsin?
Well, it has been decided by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So, yes, as of right now, it's decided. As we've learned over the last couple of years, something being a decided law is not necessarily the end of the question anymore. And this court has reversed a number of established precedents that certainly voter ID could be on the ballot, could be on the docket again if my opponent succeeds. And I have concerns about that particular issue because my opponent was the lawyer who represented the League of Women Voters in the lawsuit to get voter ID struck down. She called it draconian. She compared it to a poll tax. And when she was running for Dane County Circuit Court Judge, she bragged about that role. Now, as she's running for Supreme Court, she's backing away because she's not just running in Dane County. She's got to run all 72 counties. And outside of Dane County, that law turns out to be very popular. So she wants to back away from it. When she's been cornered by media about whether she would recuse from the case, she has declined to answer that question. I think that means the answer is no, she's not going to.
Will you support the constitutional amendment on the April ballot for voter ID?
Do you mean how am I going to personally vote? I'm going to vote yes. I think that voter ID is an important integrity tool, and legislatures can make voter integrity laws and then change them when the legislatures make up changes. I'm going to vote personally for voter ID, yes.
Act 10, you were Attorney General when Act 10 was put into law. You supported an exemption for police, fire, and firefighter unions at the time.
I actually want to correct
you. Yes, please correct me.
The decisions by the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the Seventh Circuit Federal Court of Appeals were argued and made before I was Attorney General. By the time I took office in 2015, those were done. My predecessor had argued those.
Do you believe that treating different types of public workers differently under Act 10 makes that particular law unconstitutional.
Well, the question is whether the legislature has a rational basis to make those distinctions. And that's a question that can legitimately be before a court. It seems that that decision was made already 12 years ago. Maybe, 12 years ago, more than that, by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals addressed very similar arguments. So it does seem that there is a settled precedent out there, but there is likely to be a lawsuit working its way through the courts. It's likely to end up in the Supreme Court. I think the real question for voters on this, when we have two justices on the Supreme Court now that are sitting, who promised on the campaign trail to strike Act 10 down if they got elected to the court, and my opponent was the lead attorney representing the Madison Teachers Association in the lawsuit trying to get it struck down, I think the real question for voters is there any chance that Act 10 will get an objective review by this court if my opponent wins? And I think the answer is no.
You've worked in the Wisconsin justice system for many years across many parts of it. There is a state surplus currently, and our state budget is being decided. Is there any part of that Wisconsin justice system that you really think needs an investment?
Well, there are policy decisions that the legislature's got to make about how to spend that money, and I don't want to delve into that. But I'll tell you something. You know, people have asked me, what's your agenda when you get on the court? Mm-hmm. I don't have an agenda because courts hear the cases that come to them. But there are a few initiatives that I think the Supreme Court can have a powerful role in improving things in our justice system. One of them is we don't have enough people to represent indigent criminal defendants, and we don't have enough lawyers who come in to represent litigants in cases like evictions and other things like that, where a lot of times litigants can't afford a lawyer, but having a lawyer there could be helpful in getting a just end result. Especially with the criminal defendants, we need to drive some way to get more lawyers to be willing to take those cases. We have right now criminal defendants who get charged with a crime. They're entitled to a preliminary hearing, and yet they sit long past the normal deadlines for a preliminary hearing because we haven't been able to get an attorney to take their case. And another place where I think courts need to, the Supreme Court can have a strong role, is improving the delivery of services to criminal defendants who have mental health problems and substance abuse disorders. We have treatment courts that generally take people charged with felonies, and they're doing a very good job with bringing redemption for people who have substance abuse disorders and mental health problems. The thing we're missing is on the front end. People charged with misdemeanors, the system isn't devoting resources to them right now, partially because there are so many, but partially because we don't view this as a big enough problem yet. The problem is, though, if we could go, or the opportunity, I should say, if we could do more to work with individuals who are charged with a misdemeanor, they haven't destroyed everything in their life yet. They haven't gotten to the point where it's either you get this treatment or you're going to prison. We could prevent a lot of those cases from getting worse.
Yeah. Last question for you. Trust in the court system is at an all-time low. What is something that the state Supreme Court could do? What's maybe the most important action they could take to restore public trust?
Stop behaving politically. This is the problem. It's why I got in this race. You know, this Supreme Court in their first term only heard, it's either 13 or 14, depending on how you measure, but we'll say 14 cases. Normally the court hears over 50 cases in a term. They have picked cases that are almost all politically charged cases. They've deflected a lot of cases that they should have taken on to give some guidance to the legal system, but they're so busy doing the political cases. That is why the public doesn't have faith in the courts anymore. Get rid of the politics, restore objectivity, let the other branches argue about what the policy should be, let the court apply the law the way the legislature wrote it.
Well, thank you, Judge Schimmel, for joining us as a candidate for the state Supreme Court. A reminder, the election is April 1st. Thank you, Judge Schimmel.
Don't forget early voting. March 11th, you can start mail-in early voting. March 18th, early in-person.
Good information. Thank you so much for joining Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers for watching this special edition. Please join us again.
Your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.